buzzer has sounded. We are headed to overtime with William Pattison on Fox Sports Knoxville. This is Fan Run Radio.
Hour number two of overtime coming to you live from the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios of Fan Run Radio. Dawson Wise, Jordan Moore coming at you. Getting ready for a big weekend here in East Tennessee in the sporting world. A lot of stuff going on the diamond, on the football field, and all around Knoxville this weekend. A lot of excitement on campus going on. Later in the hour, we're going to preview the baseball series against LSU, which gets going in about a half an hour from now over at Lindsey Nelson Stadium. We'll look at the Kentucky coaching hire of Mark Pope from BYU. We'll talk a little bit about that, what we expect out of the Wildcats this year, and then we'll take a look around the world of sports at the end of the hour to wrap up today's episode. But first, we head to the phones, and we've got Patrick waiting for us on the line. Patrick, thanks for being patient. How are you?
Hey, what do you say, gentlemen? How are y'all?
Well, we're doing well. How are you?
Man, I am loving it. TJ, the Kentucky fan. Mark freaking Pope. I mean, two NCAA tournaments, no NCAA tournament win. This guy, double-digit losses. I am shocked.
Yeah.
It's really unbelievable. And, you know, I listened to some other talk show guys today, and how does Kentucky not land a premier coach?
I mean, we'll talk about it a little bit later in the second segment of the hour. I feel like personally they swung on all their big time hire possibilities and did not get a hit on any of them, and I think that's why they kind of had to scramble. That's what it feels like to me, is a quick pivot by Mitch Barnhart and company in Lexington. That's just me personally, but I feel like all the guys they wanted that were bona fide big time coaches, they swung on, and they got a lot of no's in return and had to pivot quickly.
Well, it's shocking and it's humorous, but it does make you wonder, you know, when Barnes decides to hang it up, because he's here until he decides to retire, and that's a fact. What is Tennessee going to be looking at? You know, is there going to be – because the money is everywhere, right? It's schools have money and will pay money to maintain a coach that they have. And just something to think about down the road. We've got some great baseball coming up here in about 27 minutes. I'm interested to see this seldomly used pitcher come in for Tennessee. I had his name at the tip of my tongue, and I've forgotten his name.
Chris Stamos gets to start tonight for Tennessee.
Stamos. He was injured early, right?
He might have been. I know he just has not seen a lot of run this season either.
Well, we'll see how that works out. Maybe they're going to bring him in for an inning.
That's my guess,
maybe,
yeah.
Maybe two, and then bring Causey in as a long reliever, which
that's,
I think,
yeah.
Wasn't that the plan for him originally?
Well, yeah, because A.J. Russell would start the game, and obviously with no Russell, you're having to track a little bit differently on that. I think Causey works better out of the pen. I don't know if it's a mental thing or what it is, but he has been better out of the pen. So if that's the case and Stamos goes an inning and then hands the ball to Causey, I kind of like that move myself.
Well, guys, that's all I got. I really just caught in the needle. The Kentucky fan, because we know he's listening. He may be on hold right now.
I heard him earlier on the drive trying to talk himself into this hire. Trying to look for positives and brushing over all the negatives.
And I'll say this, I mean, you know, like, it's crazy. Well, listen, you guys have a great weekend. Nice chatting.
Hey, have a good night.
Thank you so much, Patrick, for your call. And Yeah, I think there's a lot of them trying to talk themselves into this hire, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But we move on now to First Things First, presented by the 37 Club, which provides access to unique content, exclusive events, private communities, and special discounts on FanRun merchandise. Join on FanRunRadio.com today. And our improvised First Things First here in the second hour is the Baseballs preparing for a showdown with the Bayou Bengals. With three straight series wins in the rearview, number four Tennessee will look to keep its run of SEC success going this weekend when it takes on the defending national champion LSU Tigers at Lindsey Nelson Stadium. The Vols enter this weekend's showdown having lost just two games all season at home, posting a 22-2 record overall in Knoxville. Tough matchup coming up. Great lineup for LSU. Jordan, what are your keys to this weekend for a successful Vols series?
The keys to me is obviously get off to a fast start tonight. You know, they've struggled the last couple of Friday nights, been able to win that first game of the series. And, you know, they've been able to come back on Saturday and Sunday and pick up some wins. But to get off to a fast start tonight, you know, pick up some runs early, get out to a lead early, build some momentum. It'd be great if Stamos could come in here early and pitch a couple of innings and get the team off on the right foot. And then following up with, you know, Pablo Cazzi, as we just talked about, which was the kind of the initial plan, is a change of pace type pitcher with a different arm slot that he's able to use. Pitching is the key. You know, when I was in here Wednesday night, we talked about the baseball team, and I said, you know, this is the best lineup in all of college baseball. It's probably the best lineup in the Tony Vitello era. Could potentially be the best lineup in program history. LSU's pitching hasn't been that great. Holman has been really, really good this season, and it's tough to see him in an LSU jersey, not a Tennessee jersey, as it came down to those two schools. It'd be nice if we had him right now with A.J. Russell down. And it's kind of weird that they're not throwing him on a Friday night with the way he's been able to pitch. You know, they're throwing him on a Saturday. But, yeah, the bats stay hot. Amick is back in the lineup tonight, which is incredible to see. It's great to see. Hopefully he can get back into the groove of things and keep bearing on balls up like he was earlier in the season. Makes his lineup, you know, even deeper, even better. But my keys are for this entire weekend. I'm gonna keep saying it the rest of the year. As I said Wednesday night, it's pitching. You're starting pitching. You have the lineup that can win you any series. As we've seen, they put up a lot of runs. It's going to come down to, do you have the arms, do you have the pitching to be able to shut down and slow down some of these SEC lineups, especially when you get deeper into the postseason. So my key this entire weekend is just starting pitching. Hopefully Stamos starts out great. You can follow up with maybe Causey tonight coming out of the bullpen, Beam, you know, the rest of the weekend. Hopefully, starting pitching holding up is the big key for this entire weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. 865-288-3131 if you want to jump in and talk baseball with us as we lead up to first pitch here in about 23 minutes at Lindsey Nelson Stadium. First thing for me, yeah, I actually wrote it down that way, pitching. It's been the thorn in the side of this team early in conference play. It seems like they struggle early in the weekend, especially. Causey has had a rough go the last couple weeks. They switch it up tonight with Stamos. You need to shore that up. This is still a very talented, very versatile LSU lineup. They may not be ranked, but that does not matter. They are still very talented, very explosive, especially playing in a ballpark like Lindsey Nelson Stadium. So you got to be able to shore up the pitching and have a good weekend on that sort, especially on the starting end of things. Mm-hmm. Second one for me, home cooking. Look, this team is really good in front of the home fans, and they have been all year. They have been really for the last 3 years for the most part. Use that to your advantage. See the ball well. Use the energy of that crowd, what's sure to be a rocking crowd tonight at Lindsey Nelson, to help you give that little bit of extra effort, put a couple wins in the win column. Look, these series are a lot more manageable when you're in your home ballpark than when you're having to go to Alex Box like the Vols did last season. Final thing for me, play with swagger. This team is so good when everyone is confident, and they know they're confident. Yeah. They know they're good. Be confident that you're a good team, that you're going to make that big play. Get that big out. Show that confidence all weekend. Don't play tight. Don't play nervous. Play like the Vols we all love so much, and it should be a really great weekend here for the Base Vols. Tennessee enters the weekend with the top scoring attack in the SEC and ranks second in the nation, averaging 10.7 runs per game, a mark that would set a new single-season program record if the season were to end today, beating the 1998 team's mark of 10.1. The Vols scored almost at will in last weekend's trip to Auburn, torching the Tigers pitching staff for 36 runs and 25 extra base hits, including a program SEC series record 14 home runs. On the year, UT leads the SEC and ranks in the top seven nationally in batting average with 338, doubles with 94, hits with 372, home runs with 89, home runs per game with 2.7, runs with 353, runs per game, like we said, with 10.7, and slugging percentage at 671. How can the Vols continue to keep the bats rolling this weekend?
I mean, just continue to do what you've been doing all season long. Continue the same approach. Those stats are just absolutely incredible to me, considering your best hitter in your entire lineup has been out for a couple of weeks.
Absolutely,
and
yeah.
You didn't miss a beat. And that's just that's just so incredible to me that they've been able to do that. But just continue the same approach. Continue what you've been doing. It's been working. I wouldn't really kind of change anything up. The lineup kind of still the same as it has been. If you've added Amick back, you've not really kind of the past couple of weeks moved a lot of guys around. Just continue your same approach. Continue attacking. Continue try to hit bombs. This lineup is just dangerous. It's to me, it's easily the best lineup in the SEC, and they make a case that it's probably the best lineup in all of college baseball. Georgia's right there with you. Just continue your same approach. Continue to do the things you're doing. Continue to be confident at the plate. Continue to hit bombs. Continue to move runners over. Hit for a high average. That's another thing that's so incredible about this team too, is just not only are you hitting home runs with the power, but you're also one of the best teams as far as average. So you're getting on base too, which just makes this lineup even more dangerous, because once you're able to get a couple of guys on base and you have that power in the lineup, the runs just come in bunches at that point.
Yeah, first thing for me is patience at the plate. Don't be in a rush. Make them work for it. Like you said, this LSU staff beyond Luke Holman has not been great. A lot of high ERA numbers throughout that staff, so make them work. Make them sweat. The crowd will start to get to rocking. We saw that in the Georgia series a couple weeks ago, these extended counts. The crowd really gets into it. You make them work a little bit more. Don't jump on an early pitch just for the sake of jumping on it. Lay back, wait for your pitch, and then drive it when you get it. Just take that little bit of extra time, find that right moment, and hit the ball well. Play small ball if you have to. This team has shown they can do that. Throughout the year, they can work the base pass and get on with singles and walks rather than, a problem that I think previous teams have had, especially that 2022 team, which was they lived and died by the home run.
Yeah.
If they were not hitting home runs, they were not scoring. It didn't seem like at all. That's going to be crucial in a series like this where, there's rough pitching on both sides, but at points, runs could be a premium. And we saw that be the case in the series last year down at Alex Box Stadium. So don't get stuck selling out for the long ball, selling out for the dinger. Be willing to keep it in the ballpark and work the base pass that way. And then finally, it's just another series. You're going to be amped because it's LSU, because it's the defending champions. They're going to come in here and be confident. It's going to be a great atmosphere, but don't let that affect the way you play. Their pitching is solid on the starting end. It's a little bit less solid in the bullpen, but don't let any of that faze you. This is just another series, same as the last two weekends. Drive the ball well, treat it like any other weekend, and go score some runs and get off to a good start, especially in tonight's game. All right, the projected weekend starters on the mound this weekend. We actually have gotten confirmation. Chris Stamos is the starter tonight. It will be his first start on the year. He's 3-0 with a 3.46 ERA. LSU will throw left-hander Gage Jump. He has started 7 games this year, a 2-0 record, a 3.98 ERA. Tomorrow night, it'll be Drew Beam for Tennessee, 8 games, 4-1 record, 3.63 ERA against LSU's ace Luke Holman. 8 games started, a 6-1 record with a 2.01 ERA. And then Sunday, it'll be Xander Seacrest we project on the mound with 8 games, 1-0 and a 3.37 ERA. He's really had a solid resurgence in that Sunday spot, and then to be determined for LSU. We've talked about the struggles that A.J. Causey and Drew Beam have had early in the weekend. How pivotal is that early series pitching for Tennessee?
It's very pivotal. I mean, you've lost, two or three straight Friday night starts in the SEC so far. It's pivotal. It's pivotal. It's critical. It's why, it looks like Vitello's made a change for tonight with Stamos getting the start. They need to kind of figure it out here in the middle of the season. You're in the middle of your SEC season, you're in the middle of the season. You kind of need to start figuring out who your Friday night starter is going to be going down, the crunch part of your schedule. Especially in the back half, as these games start to matter more and more as you get towards the back half of your season for standing purposes, for seeding purposes in the NCAA tournament. So it's very, very critical to figure out what your Friday night is going to look like. Because even now, there's a little bit of scuttlebutt that even when A.J. Russell comes back, maybe he doesn't come back as a starter, maybe he comes back as a bullpen piece, a long reliever, excuse me. So it's very, very vital, very, very critical to figure out what your plan is on Friday nights moving forward.
Yeah, I agree. It's crucial. You kind of got away with getting shelled in the opening game of the last 2 weeks because you came back to win both series. I think if you had lost those series, you'd probably be looking at this a lot more critically. Yep. You got away with it. I don't think you'll get away with it this week. LSU is not the kind of team, especially with Holman going tomorrow. I don't think you'll get away and win the series if you were to drop tonight's game because of pitching. It's a tougher group in LSU. Don't give them the satisfaction. Set the tone. I think that was one of your keys. Get a good start. It's always one of our keys, it feels like, for whatever sport we're talking about. But tonight especially, get a great start. And so that's one of my things as well on pitching. And take the pressure off the bullpen. Look, Nate Snead and Kirby Cannell have been great for Tennessee so far. You know, out of the relief spot, Nate Snead's been a workhorse, shown he can pitch on back-to-back days, give you 10 pitches one day, give you 6 innings the next, whatever you need out of him. And Kirby Cannell, again, I think I said this on Wednesday, I've never seen him go 5 innings in a game, and he does it, you know, against Georgia and gives you the innings to win that game.
Yeah.
I don't think you win that game unless Kirby Cannell's on the mound the way he was pitching on the Saturday a couple of weeks ago. But take some of the weight off of them. You don't want to have to strain those guys if you don't have to. You want to be able to use those guys sparingly when you absolutely need them instead of, okay, well, our pitching got shelled tonight. We're going to need you to give us 6 innings. You don't really want to do that to your relief pitching. So because of the past few weeks, give them a break this weekend and get a good start and get some good starting pitching early in the series. Going forward to a rubber match potentially on Sunday. All 4 of Tennessee's SEC series so far this year have come down to a Sunday rubber game. The Vols are 3-1 in those games, having won 3 consecutive decisive game 3s in each of the past 3 weekends against the likes of number 18 Ole Miss, number 22 Georgia, and now last weekend in Auburn. Under Tony Vitello, the Vols are an impressive 16-10 in rubber games, including a 15-9 mark in SEC play. If the series comes down to a Sunday, what is the level of confidence that you have that the Vols can get it done?
I mean, you kind of have to be confident with the way they've played here, you know, lately, being able to win those games on Sundays and win the series. You know, they've been playing confident. And Sechrist is pretty much on a Sunday for an SEC starter. He's a pretty good Sunday starter in the SEC. So I have a lot of confidence that if this series gets to a Sunday, that the Vols can pull it out with their lineup. I think the big thing is more so than the pitching, it's more so that our lineup is normally going to feast on a Sunday starter in the SEC. Because I think a lot of the times, you know, Sundays, these SEC schools kind of use that as sometimes a bullpen game. And if you do that against this lineup, a lot of the time they're going to this lineup and how good it is going to feast on some Sunday pitching in the SEC. So I have confidence that this lineup, even if your pitching may let you down a little bit, I think this lineup can do enough to win you a Sunday start against LSU this weekend. So I have a bunch of confidence.
Yeah, I'm very confident the last 2 weeks. Sechrist has been a nice surprise. I know we talked about for a long time before the season started, who's the Sunday guy going to be? And even when the season started, you know, who is that Sunday guy? And Sechrist, over the first 3 games of conference play, first 3 weekends of conference play, excuse me, has kind of said, I'm going to be that guy, and has stepped into that role and done exceptionally well over the past few weeks. He's been that guy that you can just hand the ball to and say, you know, go get us some innings and get us, you know, give us a chance to get the lead, and he's going to go do that. So when he's on the mound on a Sunday, I like our chances almost better than anyone that we've seen on Sunday throughout the season, just because of especially the last 2 weeks, really, Georgia and last weekend in Auburn. And like you said, the bats have been able to get going in these rubber games too. You got 7 against Georgia. You got out to an early lead in that game and were able to pretty much cruise and tell your pitchers, okay, we got you the lead. You know, go to work for the rest of the day. And then you put 19 on the board last Sunday in Auburn in a very impressive performance. And so that's even more. You know, now you can tell your pitchers, all right, we got you a 19-run lead. You know, go to work. That's the easiest thing. A pitcher can come out of the dugout and say, oh, wow, I got a 14-run lead.
Throw strikes
all right.
at that point.
Throw strikes down the heart of the plate, and let's get out of here with a victory. Even if the pitching falters, like you said, I trust the bats. They're going to rally. These guys, like you said, best lineup in the SEC. Dominant 1-9. Any guy can get you a big hit. And they, I think, could get you over the finish line in the series if they have to.
Yeah.
Obviously, we'd rather they not have to, but if they do, I think this lineup is plenty capable. I also like that the pitching is still TBD for LSU on Sunday. We don't know who they're going to throw. And now, you know, people could say, oh, that's a detriment. You know, you want to know who to game plan for, but I don't know if they know yet. You know, maybe it's a bullpen game. Maybe it's, you know, somebody that doesn't usually start on Sundays that's going to get tossed in the spot. That benefits this lineup so much because of the task that it is to try to pitch to this lineup it's such a tough task that whoever now gets thrown into the Sunday spot is going to be a bit of a disadvantage going into a Sunday.
You know, a lot of people, like with bullpen games, a lot of people look at it as in, okay, I'm going to throw a bunch of different looks at this lineup, right? A bunch of different, you know, righty, lefty, a bunch of different arm slots, different things. But then at the same time, the more you go to that bullpen, the more you bring some arms out, the more there's a chance that one of those guys are going to come in and they're not going to have it. And if a guy comes in and he doesn't have it against the Tennessee lineup, they're going to get pummeled. So that's why, you know, as you're talking about, it may be a good thing that it's TBD on Sunday, because if they do go to a bullpen game and that door starts, you know, revolving back and forth, that means this lineup is doing something really, really good.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first game tips off. Wow, I'm still in basketball mode. First pitch is in 10 minutes around at Lindsey Nelson Stadium. I believe it's on ESPNU tonight. Is it tonight's game that's on television?
I haven't looked.
I think it's on ESPNU is what we said a couple days ago. The rest of the series will be on SEC Network Plus, I would imagine. But one of the games this weekend is televised. I remember because it's going to be more convenient to watch it. But I think it is tonight's.
Yes,
and it is
tonight.
It is tonight. So ESPNU in about 10 minutes, they're going to get going from Lindsey Nelson. Hopefully the Vols get a good start on the series against the defending national champion LSU Tigers. We're going to hit a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about Mark Pope being hired as the new Kentucky head coach and some of the reactions coming out of Lexington. Stay with us. You're listening to Overtime on Fan Run Radio.
Are you in need of a smile makeover? Hi, I'm Dr. Michael Costa at Knoxville Smiles, and if you're ready to improve your smile, replace teeth that are missing, make your dentures tighter, add implants to your mouth, whatever you may need, we're here to discuss a wide range of easy, pain-free cosmetic and restorative procedures that can create a glowing, radiant smile that you've always dreamed of. Don't wait any longer. The time is now. Call us today at Knoxville Smiles and schedule your appointment at 865-539-1776 or go online to KnoxvilleSmiles.com.
Rev up your savings at Volunteer Auto Group, your one-stop destination for quality vehicles at unbeatable prices. Cruise through their vast selection of pre-owned cars, trucks, and SUVs. They've got the flexible financing options that make it easy for you to drive home today. Volunteer Auto Group, where every deal's a winner. 1501 Callahan Drive. Check them out online at volauto.com and tell them Fan Run sent you.
Hey guys, it's Logan Quinton from the 920 Podcast and Fan Run Varsity Spotlight. Yes, it's the Cookie Man, and I'm here to tell you about something sweet. Crumble Cookies is the fastest growing cookie company in the nation. After only 4 years, 500 plus stores are in operation in 50 states, with many more in build out. Just a reminder to go see the Crumble crew at Parkside Drive or Clinton Highway. And please, come check out the new location in Maryville, 1765 West Broadway, Suite C.
Are you ready to play hard and work harder? Are you looking to take the next step in your career with a company who celebrates hard work and appreciates those who do it? Then it's time to join the movement at Axel Logistics. Axel is looking to expand their award-winning sales team with logistics consultants who are outgoing, ambitious, and thrive in a fast-paced environment. If that sounds like you, visit axellogistics.com to learn more. Make sure you tell them you heard about it on Fan Run Radio. Axel Logistics, now is your time.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Go ahead, feel your engine. Admire that perfectly installed exhaust. Your vehicle's moving along this freeway like it was made from fresh installs and a whole lot of love. With eBay Motors, you get over 122 million parts to keep it running. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, they'll be the perfect fit every time. Plus, at these prices, well, we're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Life insurance. Why are you putting it off? Can't afford it? Too much hassle? Think you don't need it? There's lots of excuses for putting off life insurance. But if you weren't there, who would pay the mortgage and other bills? With Ethos, you could be covered in 10 minutes and boom, family protected. Ethos, fast and easy online term life insurance. Up to $2 million in coverage with no medical exam. Some policies as low as a dollar a day. Answer a few health questions and get your free quote at getethos.com. That's getethos.com.
Back here on Overtime as we get ready for the baseball game to start here in about 6 minutes or so, and we start to recap a coaching hire in Kentucky with this segment, Not Even the Pope Can Help Kentucky Fans. Consider this the white smoke. There is a new pope, same as the old pope, in Kentucky. The Wildcats, in a surprisingly quick move, have hired former UK player and former BYU coach Mark Pope to replace John Calipari as the program's next head basketball coach, the university announced on Friday. Calipari announced this week that he is leaving Kentucky after 15 years to take the coaching job at Arkansas. Athletic director Mitch Barnhart took two big swings at national championship-winning coaches. He was turned down by both Baylor's Scott Drew and UConn's Dan Hurley, and at least made contact with Chicago Bulls coach and former Florida coach Billy Donovan, who previously led the Gators to two national championships. Barnhart ended up with a far less proven coach in Pope, who has won 20-plus games 6 times in 9 years, but has never won an NCAA tournament game. Add that to a long list of ways in both style and substance that Pope is the anti-Calipari, who despite recent struggles guided Kentucky to 7 Elite 8s, 4 Final 4s, and a national championship. Certainly not the name many of us expected to end up at Kentucky. Is this the right hire for the Wildcats?
Is it the right hire to replace John Calipari with, considering the results that they were expecting and what they want to do in the NCAA tournament? No, I don't think it was. But if you want to consider this a desperation hire, which I think it was, then yes, I think they made the right desperation hire. Yes, but you know, for them to basically run John Calipari out of town. Now, look, you know, I've been hard on Calipari on Twitter. I've been on here. I've talked about Calipari. Me and William a few weeks back talked about why it's not working at Kentucky anymore with Calipari because of, you know, the way the transfer portal is, NIL, all that stuff. You know, it clearly wasn't working at Kentucky for Calipari anymore. And I think we all kind of expected, okay, you know, whether they fire him, you know, it went down to where he leaves for Arkansas. I think we all kind of expected them to be able to replace him with somebody as good, you know, that the same caliber, the same, maybe the results. The best case scenario was you find somebody better. You hire a Dan Hurley or I kind of thought the floor for their hire at the end of the day would be someone, which surprisingly was one of the first candidates I talked to, but I thought the floor would be a Nate Oates, a Bruce Pearl, a Will Wade, right? I thought that would be the floor. Turns out the floor is a little bit lower, a little bit lower than those names. Yeah. And here's my thing, too. They could, as it's been talked about on the shows today, I think this is a hire where they could have waited. They could have waited another week. They could have waited probably 2 more weeks. They could have, you know, talked to Billy Donovan, depending on what the Bulls do next week in the NBA playoffs. They could have potentially approached that and made him one of those, you know, offers that you can't say no to see what he would say. You could have approached a Bruce Pearl. You could have approached a Will Wade. Go down the list. But Mark Pope was going to be there no matter what. He was a hire that you could have made no matter what. And for them to go ahead and make that move now, kind of to, like as I said a few minutes ago, that it seems like a desperation hire to me. It was Barnhart knew Pope would say yes, and he didn't want to get turned down publicly anymore. He didn't want to get shamed anymore, so he went to the one guy that he knew would say yes to hire him. And I think my personal opinion is what makes it even worse is not only did they go hire him from BYU and knowing he would say yes, they turn around and are painting him like a top 6 coach in college basketball.
It's a big contract.
It's unbelievable to me. Why? Like, he has no results to say he should be a top 6 pay coach in men's college basketball. Why are you paying him right at five million?
$5.5 million a year, yeah, is five. What I saw.
You could have got him for $3.5 million.
Yeah.
And it makes no sense to me. As I said, if you want to look at it as a desperation hire and that's what happened, okay, it's a solid desperation hire. If you want to look at it as in, you know, compare it to a John Calipari and what their expectations were when this whole thing started, to me it's a failure of an hire if you look at it from that point of view.
Yeah, I think it felt like a cop-out to me a little bit where, you know, they had so many candidates that they wanted to say no in a 48-hour span after Calipari announced he was leaving that, you know, Barnhart quickly pivoted. He felt like he had to just quickly jump on somebody no matter who it was, and he did not pick the choice the fans wanted. I don't think he picked the choice that he really wanted. It felt to me more like a reactionary thing to, well, I don't like being covered in the media like this where everybody's turning me down and I'm getting made to look like a fool. So I made an impulse decision and I hired Mark Pope away from BYU. He does not have the results that we said that a Kentucky coach should have. He does not have the pedigree that we said a Kentucky coach should have, the recruiting record that a Kentucky coach should have. All of the things we said that they would probably look for in a coach, they didn't go for at all. They didn't look for that in the slightest. No tournament success, not a ton of conference success, not a big-time resume. It feels really odd when some other coaches were on the table if you just waited a little bit longer. Yes, he is a Kentucky grad. I think that's that's been pretty widely reported at this point. You know, he did play for Kentucky for a couple seasons, was a member of one of their championship teams. But what else ties him to this kind of high caliber job? It feels similar to me, and we can make this comparison here in Knoxville to when Phil Fulmer hired Kelly Harper to coach the Lady Vols. She was a former Lady Vol, but had no resume other than that really to get a job like this for the money they were going to pay her. This feels the same way to me. It felt like her ties to the university got her hired. It feels like perhaps Mark Pope's ties to Kentucky were enough for Barnhart to say, well, it's good enough for me, and say, you're hired. And perhaps, that's partly what went into pivoting into getting Mark Pope. Pope is plenty adept at mining the portal, and he'll have to if Kentucky is to field a competitive team next season, as BYU had four transfers in its rotation this year, led by former A&M and Arkansas guard Jackson Robinson, who still has eligibility. But Pope reiterated, quote, "The most important thing for us is retaining our players. We're thinking about that every day." We talked about Cal using the one-and-done method to win championships and how you have to adapt, and he was not anymore at Kentucky. Will Mark Pope do away with the one-and-done method in Lexington?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's kind of turned into a Calipari thing. Coach K tried that there at Duke for a little bit of a stretch, but I don't think you really see teams in college basketball going to the extreme that Calipari does with the one-and-done. They may take one or two of those guys, but not three, four, or five of those guys at a time. So, yeah, I think the one-and-done era at Kentucky is officially over. I think that with Pope, you're going to get guys that are going to stick around for two or three or four years under him. So, yeah, I think the one-and-done era in Kentucky is over, and it's going to follow Calipari to Fayetteville, Arkansas.
I think so, too. I think it's probably over. Pope has shown that he's closer to adapting to modern college basketball. He's able to get in the portal, grab some of these more experienced guys to come join his team, add in almost infinite resources that he's going to get in Lexington, and he'll have all the help he needs to get Kentucky up to date and get them into the portal world and kind of get some of these big-time transfers. This method, we've talked about it before, it's just not going to work. It doesn't work anymore. We've said on here a number of times, teams full of freshmen don't win national championships anymore. They get eliminated on opening weekend, like Kentucky did to Oakland this past year and has every year since 2019. It's just not a sustainable way to win basketball games anymore. Now the problem for me is, how big a pull is he going to have? Now the Kentucky name comes with a lot of pull, and the name on the front of the jersey is going to provide a big boost for him. But he's not the huge name coach. He's not Cal. He's not Coach K. He's not Bill Self at Kansas. He doesn't have that name yet. So how many guys is he going to be able to swing to say, well, I'm not really proven, but I am at Kentucky now. Come play for me. I have my doubts on that front already. We'll have to see how well he does in that regard. The 51-year-old Pope played two seasons with the Wildcats and was the team captain of Kentucky's 1996 national championship team, one of the greatest college basketball teams of all time. He was a second-round NBA draft pick and played parts of six seasons in the league, then did assistant coaching stints at Georgia, Wake Forest, and BYU. Very unproven resume. Is Mark Pope ready for the moment?
I think he is, in the aspect of being able to handle everything that the Kentucky job entails. He's a former player, so he clearly understands and knows what that entails, what that is like, what the circus with their fan base and their expectations are. I think personality-wise, I think he's going to fit in there. I think he can handle the job. I think he can take the criticism. I think he can take the critiquing because he's been in it as a player. He understands what it is. I think he, as far as a personality and understanding everything about the job off the court, I think he can handle it.
Yeah, I said I'm not sure. I figure If he would have had more success at BYU, I'd probably be more convinced to answer this question yes. And, you know, he just hasn't had that level of success at the level of BYU where I would associate it with someone that's ready to take this type of job. It all came together so quickly, pivoting from, you know, their big-name candidates to Mark Pope, that I'm not even sure if he knows if he's ready for it yet. I mean, it was 12 hours between hearing that Mark Pope's name is in the running to Mark Pope is hired as the next coach at Kentucky. It's a complete whirlwind. Has he even had much of a chance to sit down and say, you know, am I ready to go do this? Because of how quick it happened, I'm not really sure about that. The resources around him, look, they're going to help him out. They're going to help him land on his feet. But, you know, is he going to be prepared for the grind of an SEC schedule? We saw the SEC, you know, take another step forward this past year, be a very solid, very deep league at times, and it's only going to get deeper. You had Texas and Oklahoma in 2024-25. It's going to be even deeper than that. And coming out of the, you know, program that just got to the Big 12, is he going to be ready for the big-time conference grind? I'm not too sure myself. What is Kentucky getting in terms of Pope, in terms of play style and coaching?
You're looking at kind of the same play style as what Nate Oates does at Alabama, which, I mean, that play style is starting to take over the collegiate game anyways. It's becoming more widespread of, you know, the threes and rims on the offensive end, protecting the rim, protecting the three-point line on the defensive end, and that's pretty much the style of play that you're getting with Mark Pope at BYU this season. You know, they were 14th in adjusted offense. They were 60th in adjusted defense. They were 137th in three-point shooting percentage, but they were top five in three-point attempts. And they were second in the percentage of their points that come from beyond the three-point line. So you're looking at a team that is going to play like a Nate Oates Alabama team. They're going to shoot a lot of threes. They're going to shoot a lot of rim shots. They're going to bypass the mid-range shots. And then on the other end of the court, they're going to try to protect the rim. They're going to try to make you take mid-range jump shots. That stylistic play, which is the analytical way to play basketball nowadays that you see in the NBA, has started to trickle down into the collegiate game over the past 6, 7, 8 years, and now it's becoming more widespread over the past couple of years. So that's the top style of stylistic play that you're going to see with Mark Pope at Kentucky. I mean, over the past couple of years, they were pretty decent on offense under Mark Pope at BYU. You know, his first year they were 7th. The second year they were 23rd. They were 50th. They went to 103rd. So they were on the downward trend at BYU. And even his records at BYU were on a downward trend. I mean, his first year they went 24-8, then 20-7, 24-11, 19-15. So this season kind of was the bounce back year. You're basically buying him on the high end because, you know, when you look at everything else for them, they were trending downward at BYU before he had this season, which is also kind of weird too, because this was their first season in the Big 12, playing at Houston, playing at Kansas, playing those type of schools, and it was a bounce back year for him to go 23-11. Because as I said, they were in a downward trend when they were in the West Coast Conference. So it's very, very interesting to see how this is going to play out, because if this was a year ago, he's not getting the job. They went 19-15 last year and 7-9, and they were 103rd in offense. You know, it kind of goes to show you, is this a 1 year where he put the perfect roster together at the perfect time and everything kind of just fell in place for him at BYU for one season and now he's got his dream job and now it all falls back apart? Or did he kind of change something or figure something out or change something philosophical or change his offense or something over the offseason last year to have a bounce back year that he's going to improve on and tweak at Kentucky moving forward?
Yeah, in terms of play style, I mean, you said it, live and die by the three and the rim. Bread and butter, they love to shoot it. A lot of handoffs, late cuts, things like that. Quick passes to find the open look. Usually an open three is what they're looking for on that. They did struggle defensively to get stops. It kind of felt like, kind of like in Alabama, kind of like in Kentucky, where they had to outscore their opponent to win games. They had strong moments defensively, but they weren't a strong defensive team. And that's often, again, what we see, you know, what we saw with Cal at Kentucky this past year and what we saw with Nate Oates at Alabama. Coaching-wise, guy that knows the X's and O's, he knows how to get players that run his system, and he did it at BYU. You just mentioned it, you know, the perfect roster at the perfect time. Can he replicate that at Kentucky, I wonder? He's good at building rosters like that and then, you know, kind of getting guys that fit each little role and they can do everything on each side of the ball that he wants them to do. As we look forward now, Mark Pope is officially the coach. He's going to start building a roster. What should the expectation be for Kentucky come next season?
as a fan from afar, the expectations should be in year one under him is to get back into the NCAA tournament, maybe win a game or two in the NCAA tournament. You want to kind of see the type of roster that he puts together in the portal to kind of determine what the expectations will be, because, I mean, it kind of seems like a lot of these players are going to want to follow Cal to Arkansas. A lot of the recruits are going to want to follow Cal to Arkansas, and they're losing a lot of those one-and-done guys to the NBA. So who knows what type of roster that he's going to be able to kind of piece together here. But the expectation should be at Kentucky, as someone from afar watching them, is to be in the NCAA tournament. Now, their fans are going to say not only get into the NCAA tournament, but get to at least the second weekend of the NCAA tournament. Their expectations are going to remain high. They're going to stay through the roof. But mine, for me, would say, you know, getting to the NCAA tournament. And one more point, I'll go back to what you were talking about. They're kind of like their play style. It's a very, very modern style of offensive basketball. A lot of five-out stuff beyond the arc. A lot of, like you were talking about, dribble handoffs. It's kind of, you know, I watched them a few times this year. You know, it's kind of weird to say as a Tennessee fan talking about the new Kentucky coach, but it is a kind of fun, exciting brand of basketball to watch. It's really like an NBA style of offensive basketball trickled down into the collegiate game. Is basically what he ran this past season. There's actually, I think, about a 10 or 12 minute video clip on YouTube. Somebody kind of put up what his offensive style was this season and some of the plays that they run. And like I said, it's a very, very modern 2024 NBA stylistic offensive style of basketball. But the expectations for me would be for them to get into the NCAA tournament and then win a game or two.
Yeah, I said keep your head above water, which I think is kind of on the same path. You get back in the tournament, don't be at the bottom of the conference. You know, got to be able to at least stay afloat in the SEC to maintain expectations, to maintain the fan base, I think, at this point. A fan base that's already skeptical about the hire as it is. Build a roster that's going to set your foundation for what you want to do. You don't have to have, you know, the perfect roster right now, but build a foundation. Get those few guys that you're going to have for the next few years that you can start to build off of and supplement to get your style in. See growth from the guys you do bring in. Get people to start buying into this. You know, start. It might start a little bit slow. It might start small, but start getting people to try to buy into this new brand, a rebirth, if you will, of Kentucky basketball. If you don't get any buy-in, this is going to look like a failure here down the line. And win a couple big games. Let everyone know Kentucky's not going anywhere. Kentucky can still win big games, even with Cal off at Arkansas. They can still win the big games. And that things are going to work out after a period of adjustment. We'll see how it goes for Mark Pope in Lexington, hired as the new Kentucky head coach. We're going to hit our last break of the second hour. When we come back, it's another edition of In the News with Austin Weiss. Stay with us here on Overtime.
Are you tired of looking at that piece of furniture that is worn down but you don't want to get rid of it? Go see our friends at Sun Upholstery and Fabric. Locally and family owned and operated with over 67 years of combined experience. Located at 8913 Oak Ridge Highway, give them a call today at 865-237-3272 or visit them online at fabricsun.com. That's fabricsun.com, and be sure to tell Stan that you heard about him right here on Fan Run Radio.
Your tax refund belongs to you, not an identity thief. Over $6 billion in tax refunds were flagged by the IRS for possible identity theft last year. If you're in a bind this tax season, LifeLock can help. They monitor and alert you to identity threats you'd miss on your own, even if you're careful with your personal information. And if you do become a victim of tax-related identity fraud, LifeLock has U.S.-based restoration specialists ready to help solve your identity theft issue. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. Let LifeLock help protect your financial info, so all you have to worry about is what you do with your tax refund. Go to LifeLock.com, save up to 25% off your first year. The promo code is HERD, promo code H-E-R-D, to save up to 25% off your first year. LifeLock.com. Identity theft protection starts here.
Talking to your kids about the dangers of vaping can be hard. Getting them to listen to hot gossip is easy. So here's some drama you could share with your kid. Dude, did you hear about Cassie and Jake? No, but did you hear that vaping can cause irreversible lung damage and nicotine affects brain development? Nuh-uh. You don't need to gossip if you want to have an open conversation about vaping. So if you want to get tips on when and how to talk to your kids, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
What's the difference between an ordinary EV and a Mercedes-Benz EV? The feeling. Electric is what gets you there. Mercedes-Benz is what moves you in ways no other automaker can. Feel the freedom of the superbly versatile 7-seater EQB. Revel in the inspired, customizable comfort of the EQE sedan. Sense the brilliant intelligence of the EQE SUV. Discover the boundless capability of the EQS SUV. And luxuriate in the flagship meets spaceship magnificence of the EQS sedan. Every Mercedes-Benz electric vehicle offers the very latest MBUX voice-activated AI software, as well as remote access to a whole host of functions via the Mercedes Me Connect app. The vehicle's electric, the feeling all Mercedes, the choice all yours. Test drive a Mercedes-Benz electric today at your local dealer or learn more at mbusa.com/EQ.
Working on a weekend like usual. Back here on Overtime, wrapping up hour number two. About to head into your weekend, and we got a little score update. It is 2-0 Tennessee. A home run at Lindsey Nelson Stadium. I'm still trying to figure out who it is. I think it's Dylan Dreiling, but I can't yet tell. They haven't gone to a camera shot where I could tell who it is. I know it was a left-handed batter, but it is 2-0 Vols over at Lindsey Nelson. So there you go. Stamos gets through one, and you get some runs early. Good start for Tennessee. We're going to wrap up hour number two with another edition of my segment in the news, and we'll start tonight with baseball. We got an update, and obviously want to get Jordan's take on this since he didn't get to give a take last night. As Shohei Ohtani's translator, Ippei Mizuhara, has now been charged with bank fraud in relation to the continuing gambling scandal during his time working with Ohtani. It's alleged he stole over $16 million from the Dodgers' new star to make bets, along with impersonating him in phone calls. Mizuhara allegedly placed about 19,000 wagers between December of 2021 and January of 2024, with a total net loss of over $40 million, according to the complaint and CBS Sports. The maximum penalty for Mizuhara would be a $1 million fine or 30 years in prison. An update today, which is again why I kind of added this one back, Mizuhara has turned himself into federal authorities and is now in federal custody. How does Ohtani get out from under this scandal that has completely overshadowed his early time with the Dodgers?
This whole story is just unbelievable to me. You know, you've heard stories in the past of, you know, trainers or financial advisors stealing money from big time sports figures, but this whole story is just wild to me that that amount of money can be, you know, stolen or misplaced or misused by an interpreter. I don't know how Ohtani can complete. Well, I can understand how Ohtani can completely escape from this because it's one of Major League Baseball's biggest stars, biggest money, driving players, and they don't want to kind of tarnish any of that. I don't think Ohtani's scot free in this thing. You know, I think he probably had a little bit to do with some of the betting going on. I don't understand how you can be so oblivious to that, large amounts of money just disappearing. I mean, from some of the reports I've read, is basically, the way I understand it is he basically just gave everything over to this interpreter and kind of stood back and just let him do. To me, that's unbelievable to me for that amount of money to just freely trust somebody to handle your money and not check up on it, not look into it, not look at bank statements or anything. Like, you know, even with the bank that this guy's supposedly calling and impersonating Ohtani, like, the bank doesn't know. Like, this whole story, there's just so many details that I think they talked about it on the morning show this morning. I think it was Reed, and he was like, how can you just call the bank and just move that amount of money around for betting? Like, don't you have to go into the bank, you know, to kind of move the money? That's like Reed said. A lot of these movies you see, they're like, hey, we have to go into the bank to do this. We can't just pick up a phone and call. So there's just so many details. It's just so kind of curious to me, and that I just don't understand how it was even possible for somebody to be able to do that without any red flag being thrown up in any of this process. So to me, just the amount of that much, I don't want to say coincidence, but just that amount of stuff going on that Ohtani didn't know a single thing, I don't believe that. I think he had some kind of hand in this, and I think, personal opinion, I think Major League Baseball is protecting him. I think they didn't want another Pete Rose situation, and he's one of their biggest stars, one of their biggest names, one of the biggest attractions. He signs a brand-new deal with the Dodgers, clearly, you know, the Dodgers are counting on him to be there. The amount of money they've invested in him, they can't lose him. So, well, and you know, I'm not a Rob Manfred fan at all. I think he's one of, if not the worst commissioner in all of sports. I think he's awful. And I think it's a situation where he's trying to protect his product. And he's trying to protect Tony, and Tony is obviously trying to protect himself in this situation to where they can keep one of their biggest stars in the game and not have to worry about suspending him, losing, you know, out on eyeballs to watch him play. I mean, because when you suspend somebody or I don't even want to say ban like they did Pete Rose, but if you do anything like that to a player, it not only just affects that player too, it also affects the franchise, right? Because who's going to go to the games, you know, you're going to miss out on some of those people that are going to the games to watch Otani play, right? That hurts ticket sales. It hurts concession sales, et cetera. Go all down the line. So I don't think Otani is he scot-free in the fact that he's probably not going to have anything legally done to him? Yes. At this point, it looks that way. But to me, did he have something to do with all this? I think he did.
I agree. I think they're probably going to make an effort to make sure that nothing comes of it on that side. Now, I do think he's probably going to have to acknowledge it. I don't think he's going to be able to just let it get swept under the rug. The more that comes out, I mean, like you said, completely unreal. You have to read it a few times to kind of grasp how much money is involved in this, how much time is involved in this, almost 3 years' worth of time. So he's going to have to acknowledge it. I'm not sure, you know, in terms of the public eye, I don't think he'll ever get out from under it just because now it's going to be looming over him as long as this trial is going. But in terms of the MLB, I agree that they might be making an effort there. Second thing tonight, there have been recent discussions of the development of a new college football super league, which would see the game morph into one cohesive entity just like the NFL. Many college leaders came together in Glendale during the Final Four to discuss this idea and how it could be implemented. The primary complaint is that university presidents should be involved in the oversight of college sports, not just athletic directors and conference commissioners as proponents of the potential SEC Big Ten plan. This plan would essentially divide the top echelon of college football into 10 leagues of 7 teams each, another plan which has actually gone into more detail of 8 10-team leagues. There was even a suggestion that that 8th league would have a promotion and relegation system for some of the Group of 5 teams, much like the English Premier League. In soccer, this is a wild concept to read about considering where we're at in college football now. We could go on for hours about this, but at its core, would this idea be a good development for college football?
I think the idea of having a super league or super leagues is a great idea for college football itself. Me and some friends have been talking about this for about 2 years now. I talked about this on on Overtime last summer with Jake. We brought it up a lot when all of the Pac-12 going, you know, some of these Pac-12 schools going to the Big Ten was being talked about and thrown around. I think it's the best thing at this point for college football to have some type of super league or super leagues. I think their best bet or their best situation will be to have 4 major leagues that have roughly 24 teams in them. And then, you know, you can get to a 16-team playoff. You can divide them up into divisions, however you want to do it. You know, six divisions of 4 teams, vice versa, however you want to do it, 4 divisions of 6 teams. But having, like, the relegation system, I'm not about that at all. I'm not a fan of that. Like, I'm not a soccer fan. I don't understand any of that. I'm not a fan of having programs come up, programs come down. At the end of the day, to me, the best system of what needs to happen is clearly you have a bunch of schools in Division I football playing on two different types of, I don't want to say fields, but playgrounds, basically. You have the big dogs, right, the Power 5 schools that have all the money, that can pay the NIL, that generate, you know, 80 to 90% of the revenue for college football itself. Those schools need to be separated from the, let's say, the Georgia Southerns, the Appalachian States, the Coastal Carolinas. I mean, they're not playing on a level playing field with the rest of them. There's no reason that an Alabama should be playing by the same set of rules as a Coastal Carolina. It's two different entities, two different programs with two different abilities, NIL, everything else. To me, take 72, 82, somewhere in that range, Power 5 programs, divvy them up into 3 or 4 conferences, make them a Division 1A Power Super Conference that has 4 different separate divisions in those. Let them have a 16-team playoff. Let them have the big TV deals. Let them have a commissioner that makes all the rules, separate yourself from the NCAA. And then the rest of these schools, like the Appalachian States, the Coastal Carolinas, the UTEPs, let them be a Division One. There used to be a Division One AA.
Yeah.
And now it's FBS and FCS.
Yeah.
Kind of have the same thing, but you just separate it even more, right? And, you know, have basically Division One, Division AA, Division 3A, basically like Major League Baseball has Single A, Double A, Triple A.
Right.
You know, to me, that's the best route. But the regulation situation, I'm not a fan of that. Like, you shouldn't be able to go up and go down. You're either in it or you're not in it, and that should be how it should be.
Yeah, the promotion relegation thing's weird, but it did get brought up. I just think you don't want to be rotating those schools with revenue sharing and all that. I don't think you want to deal with that. But the more I read about it, the more it does sound really intriguing to have a kind of a super league thing, to be separate from the NCAA, be able to make your own rules and have the best teams in the country playing each other all year. I think that would be really cool. It would be an NFL style where you're playing a harder schedule. You're playing, you know, that top echelon. You're not having these four games a year where you're playing UT Chattanooga. No offense to UT Chattanooga. Kent State, you know, this year for Tennessee, just to name a couple of those. But it's so intriguing the more I read about it. And I'm looking forward to seeing where it goes. Almost out of time here. Real quick, we'll skip one of the topics today. We'll go right to just a quick Masters update for you. Bryson DeChambeau actually fell out of the lead after I wrote this up. he was tied for the lead with Scottie Scheffler. He ends the day a stroke behind Scheffler. Scottie Scheffler leads the Masters at Augusta. Morikawa, Fleetwood, Willett, Cantley, Reed, all in the top 20. Scheffler and DeChambeau separated by one stroke. Max Homa is third. He's also one stroke back. The big story of the week was Tiger Woods. His first 2 days have gone okay. Made his 24th straight Masters cut, which is an incredible accomplishment. It's a Masters record with 24 straight made cuts. He shot one over yesterday, shot even today, still 8 strokes back of the leaders. So we'll see what Tiger can do there at Augusta as that tournament continues on. That's going to do it for us here on Overtime. 2-0 Vols at Lindsey Nelson in the bottom of the first. I think it might be the second inning now, but 2-0 Tennessee over there at Lindsey Nelson.
And it was Billy Batts. Billy Amick hit the home run.
There you go. So it was Amick and not Dreiling that hit the home run. The Vols are off to a good start there. We'll be back on Monday to cover the Baseball's Weekend Series, the Orange and White game, and so much more here on Fan Run Radio. You'll be listening to Overtime with Austin Wise and Jordan Moore. We'll see you on Monday.
I was afraid to cut the cord, but once I did, I couldn't believe it took so long to do it. Paying too much for my cable bill had become a bad habit. I either wasn't getting what I wanted or never knew where to find any of my favorite shows until it was too late. Plus, the prices just kept going up. Thankfully, I discovered a new way to watch, called Philo. For just $25 a month, I can catch all my favorite shows on networks like BET, MTV, and TLC. It even has Nickelodeon for my kids. I can watch anytime I want.